Hey there, if you are ready to build your service-based business from scratch and ditch your 9-to-5, then I want you to head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap and download my free Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit. Again, you can head to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap to download my Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit to get started on building your service-based business and ditching your 9-to-5. Hello and welcome to She Did It Her Way, a podcast dedicated to helping you launch a business that allows you the freedom to create from anywhere, design your own schedule in a way that supports you, and pursue what it is that lights you up. I'm Amanda Bolin, your host, and it is time to do it your way. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the She Did Her Way podcast. I'm very pumped and so excited you are here tuning in, giving me just a sliver of your day. And I want to welcome all the new listeners because we get new listeners every single week, every single episode. And I just want to welcome you with open arms and let you know that if you are thinking of starting a business or you've recently started the business, you want to quit your corporate job and you just cannot seem to find your tribe, well, welcome. You have found your tribe, and I'm so excited that you are here. You're going to learn 3 to 5 steps from each of the guest fields, specifically to copywriting, email marketing, and then also finding your sweet spot. We're talking about discover how to plan and strategies for the future of your business. You're also going to hear from them on how to cut through the noise and drive revenue in your business. We talk a lot about building that revenue. How do you decrease distraction and cut through the noise? Also discover the importance of opt-ins, email lists, and sending newsletters. They're all fantastic at every single one of these. I'm so excited for you guys to tune in to this panel. I will let you know there are parts the volume may adjust here and there. That is because of the audio piece that I took, and I had it rendered and leveled out the best that it can. So just be patient. It's definitely worth it. It'll be great. And I can't wait for you guys to tune in.
My first question, well, let me, Shauna, go ahead and let's introduce you. Tell us a little bit about you, your business, and then we'll get right in.
Okay. I'm Shauna. I'm a performance / business coach, and over my 10 years-ish of self-employment, I've had businesses in the realm of personal branding, image consulting, and digital marketing, so I know quite a bit, just to give an overview of the types of questions you might want to ask me about. Quite a bit about personal branding, confidence, self-worth, stepping into that, but then also funnels, digital marketing, messaging, a little bit of copy, not to that extent, and pulling that all together for conversion.
Awesome. Thank you. My first question that I have for you guys is, what are 3 to 5 very specific steps that attendees can take in regards to each of your fields? Who would like to go? Anyone can go.
Okay, the first thing that you need to do is, let's go ahead and go with Amy, what she said, define your voice on paper. I want you to figure that out. Not to be like preview whatever, ashlynwrites.com/findmyvoice, you can get it and then unsubscribe immediately. I feel like icky even saying that. But that can help, but just find your voice and get it on paper somehow. The second thing is survey your audience. And I'm going to give you one like magic question that's so good. If you could wave a magic wand, get this problem to go away, what would that be like? What would that look like? That's like a great question that you can ask them. One more is, I just had it. What was it? I'm sorry, I'm running on sleep.
Yeah. 6 planes in 6 days, so.
What have you done in the past to solve this problem? That's the other one I want you to ask. So that's the second thing that I have for you to do. And then the third thing is just commit to studying copy in some capacity. There's copyblogger.com, hackers, my website's out there. There's tons of resources, but I just hope that you kind of have learned how it's going nowhere, writing for your business, and you need to be one who knows messaging backwards and forwards for your brand, so just commit to figuring that out.
Okay, the first thing I want you to do is text or email 5 different people across different areas of your life, and I want you to ask them a question along these lines of, if I were a fly on the wall listening to you talk about me and what I do to someone else, what would I hear you say? If I were a fly on the wall overhearing you talking about me or introducing me to someone else, what would I hear you say? And I want you to, at least five people, make it just super casual, just say you're doing a branding or a copy exercise. But it's good for you to see how other people are talking about you. And I've actually done this to Amanda. I've sent that question to her about me. And it's super helpful for you to get clarity around talking about yourself. The second thing that I want you to do is to start saying no to certain activities in your business. So you're getting a lot of information from this summit, and there's a lot of notes that you all are walking away with. I want you, when you go home, to make an essentials list and a non-essentials list. And I want you to actually say no to, you know what, these are great ideas, and it can be really shiny and exciting to want to implement everything. But what are the things you're going to just leave over here? Like, maybe someday I'll get done, but these are the absolute micro essentials. And I had a third one that's escaping me, so I might circle back around if I remember it.
I'm going to put something on that essential list. Communicate regularly with your people. So take the copy, take this messaging that you're working on. But the biggest thing is, what can you do to stay top of mind and to keep that relationship, to nourish that relationship? Even if it's hopping on a Facebook Live for like 5 minutes and just checking in and saying, you know, I had this random idea, I just want to share it with you, or writing out the emails for that funnel. But the biggest thing is, you have to keep that relationship, because if you get them on your list and you're just trying to collect these emails and you wait 60 days and next thing you know you're launching something and it's like, hey, you know we haven't chatted in a while, but I'm selling this product, they're going to be like, unsubscribe. Like, why would I even listen to that? And I go through my inbox now and then and just unsubscribe to tons of stuff because, yeah, out of blue, I don't even remember who this person is and they're hitting me up with some sort of sale. So just if you can work in some way to regularly communicate with them, you're going to be light years ahead when you are ready to take that jump and launch something. And I think the second thing off of that is sometimes that feels overwhelming. Like, I remember when I started working with my first coach, he was like, you need to put something out weekly. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I don't have time for this. So for some of you, that might mean hiring someone to write it for you or to craft it. And it doesn't have to be insanely expensive. But for me, that was really hard because I was like, this is communicating with my customers. I should be doing this. But what I realized was the alternative was that it wouldn't get done. And so if you're at a position where you can bring someone on to guarantee that that communication will happen, it's okay. Don't feel guilty about it. You can add in your touch and you can tell them, hey, this is from me. Make sure this makes it in there. But if that is going to increase the likelihood of you actually continuing that communication, it's totally fine. It's okay.
Okay, important, real quick. Three testimonials. I want everyone to reach out to three people, even if you haven't started your business or you're new or you don't have clients yet. There are three people who can speak to either your skill sets, your expertise, your character, what it's like to work with you in a different capacity, but three testimonials of your character, business, or services by the end of next week.
Awesome. Do you remember yours? No. Okay. No, you never mind. My next question is how do you guys plan and strategize for the future of your business?
I'll take this one. I started my business when I was 22. It was 2007. And I used to be very solid in that vision. Whole mood board, vision board, the whole deal. And had very specific goals that I'd work to year after year. I'm not saying that that's bad, but what happened with me over my journey is that I got so obsessed with that end goal vision that I clutched to that vision even though I was evolving in my business and the actual outcome that I was really wanting was changing and shifting. But because we hear words like persist and determination and fortitude, I thought that I had to keep persisting to that end vision and that end goal. Does that make sense? And so I ended up not living what I call in my sweet spot and deviating away from my zone of genius because I was clutching to that end goal and that end vision. So for me right now, just to give an alternative to like not setting goals, that you can do this your own way, I operate incredibly intuitively. And so I might have one overarching goal for the month, very loose goal. But besides that, I, for the most part, get to wake up on a daily basis, besides the rocks and the pebbles that we got to learn about yesterday, and go, what do I want to do today? What feels right to be doing today to persist towards that one goal? but leaving the flexibility to know that that end vision can change, and you need to regularly check in with yourself to make sure you're still on the path to what you actually still want.
I can kind of give the flip side of that. What's your Myers-Briggs? I'm ENFJ, so like I think that some people work better like that. I need a little bit more. I don't know. Let me explain a little more. So last year, I've only been in business 2 years. But last year was the first year that I realized, like, I need to define what enough is for me, enough money and income for our business. But I also need to define what just enough across the board looks like for what I want my life to be like and where I want to be in 5-10 years. So that's actually where I start planning. And then figuring out, like, based off at the actual income goals that we have, like, I need to take home to my husband and my 2 dogs. And then taking that and working backwards. So defining the number of clients, which is very small, defining how much money we need in sales. And then the way that looks in a year is we just do 4 launches a year, 1 a quarter, and the rest of the time we're serving our audience, just like Hassan said. So that's been something that's been really helpful and freeing. As far as like more nitty-gritty, like you said, we run on 90-day years, which is a sprint system. I feel like that's like Scrum technology. You know what I mean? That's been helpful because things change, and I want to be nimble, and I want to be able to pivot and turn and change things. So I really only plan out 3 months at a time, like hardcore, and then I don't worry past that. I plan it when it gets there.
I am also a Myers-Briggs, and I do the same thing. The hard thing, if you can read a book on this, if you're a person that schedules way too much in a day and you never get it done because you're putting too much in a day, read the book, The One Thing. This, I have it in a book format. I have it in audio. I think it's going to be an annual read for me. But if you can choose the one thing for that day, the one thing for that week, the one thing for that month, it can make you feel like, for all of us that have this huge to-do list, you can still look at that page and say, you know what, I did that one thing. And so you can call it a successful day, because a lot of us set goals that are completely unattainable. You know, we just expect ourselves to get so much more done. And so you get that one thing and it can make you feel good. I also work in 90 days because, and he covers this in that book, when you do much longer than that, it's hard to really feel like it's realistic to achieve. And things do change, because at the end of, like, for example, my last 90-day goal, I thought I was going to launch a product by then. Well, I found out about a course that I could go through to help with it, and so it completely rearranged my next quarter. So if I planned a 6-month or longer, it would have all been out the window, and then I would have just felt like, wow, you didn't do anything, right? So I do 90 days. I'm really a little eccentric with this. I went to the bullet journal because I couldn't find a planner that did this. I have a 90-day. I pick 3 projects only, by the way, for that 90-day sprint. Then I have a monthly goal, like I said. And then every week on my weekly view, I have the one thing for the week. And then every day, I pick the one thing for that day. And I can show you in my planner. I have it written down. And that way, I can literally say, okay, Jocelyn, you didn't get those 15 things done, but you got that one thing done. And it ties to that 90-day goal.
Thank you. What is the one or two things that, let's say you thought, okay, I need to drive revenue in my business. What is that one thing that you do behaviorally that then results in revenue to your business? Just to give us an idea into your mind and how you think as an entrepreneur and how you continue to scale. So if you're selling a product or a service, how do you cut through the noise to know that I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and then that's going to drive revenue in my business?
Well, I touched a little bit on this in the VIP session. This is going to seem really basic, but I'm telling you, business owners aren't doing it, so we need a good reminder of this. You only have a finite battery, and it can be very easy to have a superwoman complex about going into your business. Very easy. And if you realize you have a finite battery and you've got to wear all the hats and do all of the things, I find that a lot of business owners are spending 80% of their time doing like the marketing and the social media and all that, meaning that only 20% is left over to actually deliver their service or their product and nourish the customer after they've converted in that zone. And when you only give 20% to the actual service delivery, you are constantly converting, delivering, and then back to selling. And it's really, really, really a grind. If you can flip that and have 20% of your personal time and effort to the customer journey and all of the hats that you have to wear, meaning you're delegating and passing those things off, and instead spending 80% of your time and effort personally delivering the service in an outstanding way, the difference between good and outstanding work is that outstanding work is going to sell itself. So if you can keep your eye on the general idea of making your business highly referable over the long term by doing incredible, outstanding work and making your service or your product an experience versus just a conversion, then you're going to have all of these customer minions that are shouting your name and your brand from the rooftops that are happily sending customers your way.
Thank you. We use a lot of Facebook ads to do our funnel, and something happened to where our funnel was shut down for a few weeks, and so we were in a situation where, I mean, it was either like figure out where you can bring in money or you're just going to take this month off. So we were literally in a situation where we had to be creative. And one of the things that I immediately went to was partners, people that I knew had a similar market to me. They trusted me. They believed in my product. We reached out to them and we said, you know, hey, is this a way that you think that you could promote this? Like, does this align with wherever you are with your customers? And, I mean, we had a few people send out some campaigns for us, and that month was, I mean, it was killer. It was great. So, you know, while we were getting Facebook fixed and back up and running. But so the reason it worked was because we've built these relationships. And we did the same thing with reaching out to our list. We sent some emails and said, you know, we know that you guys went through this. Is there anyone that you think could help or that could use our help? Or we've even tapped people that said, you know, you went through this once a year. Is this something that you'd want again? So we had a renewal thing. So because we had these relationships that we were building and these contacts, we were able to kind of go to them to get some quick revenue. So for people that haven't started out, that could even just be writing family. You know, Shauna gave some excellent advice reaching out to people during your workshop earlier, but reaching out to them and saying, hey, look, you know, this is what I'm doing. Do you know anyone that might need this service? But those contacts, those relationships can totally bring in some money quickly. Thank you.
So I love launches. I love when they're in my business. I love helping clients with them. But the thing that I've learned that is like a direct correlation to sales is learning that I have to manage my energy and I have to protect my energy. You know my history. I told that to you. And so that shed some light on it. But realizing that my calendar is a zero-sum game. If I put something on my calendar, either during a launch or pre-launch mode, something else has to go. And that has been something that's been a big learning over time. It's not like other things where you can fit a lot in, like it's zero sum. Also, the bigger your business grows, the more inaccessible you need to be. That's something that Michael Hyatt says, and it rubbed me the wrong way at first, but then I was like, that's kind of true. And the bigger your business grows, you're going to have to pull apart a little bit to protect this, because this is your money maker. This is the thing that if you can protect this and feed it what it needs to come up with the creative ideas that are going to take your launch to the next level or your product, whatever is going on that's going to bring in all the sales, that is, to me, what has made us more money and had a better launch when I stepped in as a leader and protected myself instead of running myself.
Thank you guys for sharing. I want to open it up. Does anyone have any questions that they want to ask? Really
a grind. If you can flip the don't all jump at once.
Yes, Amanda.
Personal time and effort to the customer journey and all of the hats that you have to wear, meaning you're delegating and passing those things off, and instead spending 80% of your time and effort personally delivering the service in an outstanding way, the difference between good and outstanding work is that outstanding work is going to sell itself. So if you can keep your eye on the general idea of making...
That's a really good question. I'm going to just repeat it to make sure that we get it. So the question is kind of like the chicken and the egg. Do you go after the client and then bring the revenue in, then find the person to train, or do you train and prep and then go get the contract and the clients?
When I grew my team, I brought on the people first and then found the clients. We'd hit a point where we were at capacity with my time and my energy that I could take on, I knew the only way to grow was to make the investment of time and energy training two team members to do what I did. So that was is hard. And it definitely, I went through a period where I was like, well, it was, I hope this works. But we had seen consistently in inquiry load that we knew it was like going to be steady. We had the funnels in place, they kept coming. So I felt comfortable then giving the time and energy to going through the whole interview process, which for us was 6 weeks. And then after that, taking two girls on and training them and then holding their hand, which meant time out of my bank to walk them through serving our clients. And now I let, you know, they serve them and I step in for at 1.5, an hour and a half for every client they take on because they, that so that's what worked for me, was going that direction, chicken egg.
Yeah, I don't think, without knowing, like doing and understanding fully what the business is, I would think you'd want to get those people in there because you're going to miss out on revenue if the client's ready to purchase, but then you don't have the team members in place to execute immediately. They're going to walk, and they're going to walk to a competitor, again, not knowing what you do. So, you know, it's kind of one of those spend money to make the money, I think. But there could also be some pros to getting the customer on. I don't know how reactive you can be because maybe the customer or the client comes on and they need something specific that you want to poach by bringing on a specific kind of employee, and there is some reactiveness that you do need at play. So there could be pros. I don't know if you if there's a right or wrong answer to this one. I don't know if you're ever going to have a firm yes or no. So I think that you kind of have to do a little bit of a gut check and ship at some point. You just make the leap one way or the other. But I think you're going to learn pros and cons from either way.
And I know Amanda, she worked so much with hiring, and one of the things we talked about was she said invest before you need, because otherwise you're going to be scrambling. It's a lot of effort to train people, and so imagine doing that on top of bringing on these new clients. It's just too much. So I've heard it from multiple people where they say if you wait until you need it, it's too late.
And I think that goes for even if you're looking to hire a virtual assistant in your business or whatever that looks like. I think it was Jenna Kutcher's podcast where she recommended to go through and just start making SOPs in your business, even if you can't see that you might outsource this thing right now, create it, and then when that time comes, which actually when I did that, my VA came to me like 2 weeks after I did it, and I unloaded the entire production of the podcast, and I was not planning for it, but I think it's the getting ready to get ready and preparation. So that was a great question. Someone else? Yes. So the question is to bring someone that's already within the industry on, or do you take someone who is completely just new to it?
Yep. Tara Gentile, is that how you say her name? Do you know who I'm talking about? She sent out an email yesterday, and she was like, at conferences, the worst thing you want to hear is, it depends, from a speaker. And she was like, but the thing is, that's what usually the answer is, it depends. So what we've done in my business, my team is about, I think it's six now. We have had some of the jobs, Facebook ads, virtual assistant, like inbox management, what's another, bookkeeping. I hired somebody who was specialized in that area because I wanted them. They were fit otherwise. My two associate copywriters and the studio manager for the calligraphy side of our business, I trained them. They came in with the vision, the values, and I knew that it was trainable what the tasks were that I needed. The copywriters were good writers. They weren't conversion bent yet, but we got them there. So I think it depends on the role that you're looking for.
And I will piggyback off of that. There's a couple of things. I mean, there's some cons to having people that are industry trained already. That is, they already have habits and behaviors in place that you may not align with. When it comes to hiring and bringing on the right people, there are a category of trainable tasks, systems, processes that you can educate in-house. The things that I find are most important with employees or anyone bringing on your team that aren't necessarily maybe coachable, but sometimes a person just has it or they don't. I hate to be trite, but a lot of the soft skills, being able to communicate, being able to have a great customer service aura about them and energy about them, speaking at high levels, interacting with, what you know, the soft skills stuff that you can't find in every person, perhaps. And some people are super at the systems and skills, but they're not great customer service reps. So I would kind of separate out the tasks from that point of view. And I think I would prioritize the things that absolutely need to be there that aren't as trainable and coachable and make that a priority, in my opinion.
And I have, we'll do a DISC assessment to see how we complement each other. My assistant, like, I actually thought she, like, lied on her results. I was like, you are the exact opposite of me. Do people exist like this? And she has been amazing. She's the perfect complement to me. So I trained her. She knew nothing, but we are the perfect match, and I love her because of it. And now she's an expert, and I mean, she retrains me sometimes. I forget how to do things, so yeah, she's
I like
awesome.
How you said, like, hiring your weak spots. That's
yeah, exactly. Things that we can't do. So someone that compliments you. Yeah,
love it. Someone else, I think, had a question.
Yes.
What is the best way to financially leap?
I was not planning for it.
It depends.
Yeah. It does.
It does.
I can start here because I'm super risk averse, believe it or not. And so for me to make the jump, I knew I needed a lot of security. I have a husband, and he would have gladly supported me fully, but I'm this independent, and I'm going to do this, and I don't want to feel like a burden on you. So for me, and this is, again, a little extreme, I made sure I had 6 months of expenses saved up so that because I have seen it, talking about how people take any gig, right? Any money that's thrown in your way. And the challenge was that with that is it takes you away from your zone of genius, right? When you're just scrambling to pay the bills, you're not truly aligning with what you set out to do. And I've seen so many people do that where they quit their job, you know, randomly, they weren't financially stable. And so they're just taking any gig that will bring in a dollar. And sometimes that works. For me, it wouldn't have. And actually for myself, when I first started doing my business, I had some launches that like would bring in a quick buck, but it wasn't building a sustainable business. And until I shut off that, I call it closing the valve, until I turned off that income stream and forced myself to only focus on the one that I knew would build a sustainable business, I wasn't making any progress in there because it was still giving me that little cash flow. But luckily, I had 6 months of expenses to do that. So I personally am someone who takes a measured risk. It's still a risk, but I am very intentional about it.
I think you need to know your tolerance level of that risk. So let me provide another perspective. I had no backup plan.
We're the opposite on that.
Complete. None. I also knew for myself that I wanted that pressure to make it work. And I was at a place in my life where I was completely independent. I had no kids, no husband. I was young and ignorant. And I just knew that if I had that pressure on me, I would figure it out. And there was a lot. I mean, I attribute a lot of my early success to that, not having that safety net. Now, is that irresponsible? Perhaps a little irresponsible not to have that savings account. But just to give another perspective, if you're all like, 6 months of savings, do this your way. There's no right or wrong. And I will also say what goes through your mind as far as making investments in your business doesn't go away. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, at like 10 years in your business, when you need to make a big financial investment, you're still like, do I need to do this? Do I not? Like, you're going to always be playing that game in your mind of like spending the money to make the money. And for the most part, when I spend it, I make it.
It's like we planned this because I'm somewhere in the middle. So I am like, didn't like you, Justin, with your personality. I was going to have six, like once the idea got in my head, I realized there was this whole ecosystem of women that love their job. Like, what was that? And so once I realized that and wanted to go do that, I decided I needed to have 6 months of expenses and 6 months of clients on deck and on tap for me. And then I came home, it was after recovery, and I went back to my job as a publicist and complained one too many days. My husband looked at me and he was like, "You're done. You're putting in your 2 weeks notice. I'm sick of living with somebody who complains about how much they hate their job." So it happened a lot faster. I did have the security, like you said, of a second income in our family. But that said, I am also like you, once I'm stubborn as anything, and once I made the leap and realized, like, I got to make this work. I want to prove it to him that I can still bring in my old income. And that lit a fire under me. I did, though, for those first 2 months, take on anything I could get my hands on. And it wasn't until kind of the first person reached out and saw that I would be a good launch copywriter that I realized, like, this is my thing, and it's going to be steady for me. So I was kind of both ways to speak to the thing. I still, my palms sweat every time. Like, we had a big $20,000 investment this year in the business. I slept on it for a month. So it's still hard to make those decisions. I'm working with Sheena Skidmore has a program called the Blueprint Model. She's helped me with financial coaching, kind of what I was talking about earlier, figuring out enough. Like, now I know my numbers that I have to hit. I don't, like, finances in my business stress me out 0%. So figuring out a financial coach that you can work with, I think, is a really important investment.
Right? Love it. Thank you, guys. I would also add on to that is, validate your business as best as you can before you make the leap, because I have also seen a lot of people, once they make the leap, and we think, like, even I thought this when I quit my target to Wells Fargo, I will figure it out when I get there. But what happens is that you get into this environment where your energy is split, and then you go to that mode about trying to find financial ways to support yourself. Even if you are supporting yourself solo or you have that second income, it can, like, it really depends on the person. So, like, knowing yourself and the type of environment you do really well in, and there's no shame in any which way of environment that you do well in. It's just figuring that out and then moving forward to that. So we, yeah.
So this is what I did with mine. So when I decided, when I was in Amanda's apartment and I said, I think I'm going to quit my job. I went home that weekend and I was like, okay, I need to make sure that this is viable. And this goes to where, actually, a point that I missed yesterday. You can set up a lead magnet. Like, you want to, you know, build traffic and stuff. But in my opinion, you should have some sort of opt-in set up even before you have traffic. For example, when I actually started my business as a book, I didn't even know I wanted to turn it into a business. But luckily, someone told me, Jocelyn, in your book, put in, if you want the audio version, go to this website, go to this web page, put in your email and download it. And so when I was ready to test my idea, I had already almost 1,000 people on that list. So what I did, though, was I got them on a webinar and I said, look, I don't even have this product yet, but this is what I'm envisioning. Will you guys buy this? And that night I got 8 customers. It was at a way too cheap a price. It was a tenth of what I charge now. But it validated it. And it, by the way, until they give you money, it is not validation. A verbal yes is, like, you need to say, okay, like, show me the money, right? But those 8 customers, I put in my 2-week notice that Monday after that webinar. So I was, again, very risk averse.
Thank you. We're coming up on, one more question. Go for it. So nurturing the funnel before you have the product.
So I was a really crappy, like, list builder back then. I didn't really communicate with them like I now know I need to do. So my emails back then were like, hey, by the way, I'm still here. But you, when you're sharing, when you're communicating with them, you don't only have to share your own stuff. Like, if I find a really good Forbes article, I still send that out to my list. So if you're literally, like, ground zero, you don't even have blog posts to share yet, just share with them stuff in the field and say, look, I found this amazing podcast, go listen to it. I found this amazing blog post, go listen to it. And this, you can sit down for an hour and write out, like, 6 weeks worth of emails, And then once a month, just create four more. This is what I have my client doing. Every month, just one day, she sits down and writes four emails and adds them to the drip. And so she's keeping it regular. And then you can start kind of transitioning into what you want to do. I do have a lead magnet, actually. You can opt in and unsubscribe if you want. But JocelynPearson.com, if you go there, I have a PDF on how to test an idea using – how to test your idea before you create it. So it's six ideas on how you can do that. But then, yeah, get them in a drip campaign. It doesn't have to be your own stuff. If you literally have nothing, that's fine. But still try to keep regular communication if you can.
And I would think, too, it's all about expectation. So if you don't have the thing that you're delivering, don't – I wouldn't put that in the headline per se if you're not ready to deliver that thing within 7 days. So if you're wanting to collect email addresses, I would probably leave it more general to, like, you know, join my newsletter. Not that. That's too lame. We can do better than that in this room. But, you know, don't offer the specific thing. Don't set an expectation if you can't deliver within 7 to 14 days, in my opinion. Leave it more general in terms of collecting that email address. And one really just practical piece of advice, because I learned this the hard way last year, no matter what email service you use, if you're not actively weeding out contacts that are not opening your emails or that haven't clicked on anything, what happens is that MailChimp, ActiveCampaign, whatever it is, will only send your emails to a small percentage of that list because you have a negative scored list. And Jocelyn touched a little bit on this. And also, depending on where you have different opt-ins, we had over 2,000 spam emails on our list. And because they were spam and no one was opening those, it ended up that only about 12% of our list was being delivered to. 12%. And so check in on your email campaign provider and make sure that whether you're doing it manually by checking your open rates, you're weeding out your inactive contacts regularly. And do not be it's not about the number, you guys. Just get them off your list.
And to go with that, if you see an unsubscribe, like, I remember when my first unsubscribe happened, I almost cried. I was like, they don't like me. I'm terrible. You know, we always take it personal. It's okay, because you need to just realize, you know what, whenever I am ready to share something with them or launch something, they clearly wouldn't have supported that. It's totally fine. You don't want them on your list anyway. They were just diluting it. So unsubscribes are a good thing. It's letting you, I mean, to an extent, but it's keeping your list healthy. It's totally okay.
So many feelings right now. Okay, so unsubscribe. I love what you said. Another thing, a mindset that helps me is thinking they just had, like, because I used to look all the time. Now I don't, it's so big that I'm like, I don't care. But thinking, like, they just had a bad day, or they just need more white space in their inbox. It's okay. Like, they don't hate me. They just need more white space. So those are two thoughts that have helped me. Definitely fix your conversion rates, because you make conversion writers like me batty when I look at the percentage and I think I'm a bad writer. The other thing I want to say is, like, yes, ideally you would launch with a welcome sequence leading into a long-term nurture sequence leading into a tripwire. Like, but that's what I build out and, like, write copy for clients that are, like, at a certain level. I think I see a lot of my students get a little hung up on, like done is better than perfect when it comes to your email list. So freeing to hear you say you were a crappy email list builder. Me too. Like, I started my email list, like, surveying about stuff I don't even do anymore. And, like, your list, it will come back to you and your center over time when you communicate that the right way. So don't worry about that. Just start it. And then I like to, like, commit to serving them. I don't think – so I started it, built it for, like, how long? Probably 8 months before sending regular weekly emails. And it was January of 2017, and I was sobbing in a mastermind retreat, and I was like, I've made other people hundreds of thousands of dollars from their email list. I don't serve my list. And that was when I was like, I can't keep doing this. I want to serve my people. So I just committed that year. I was like, I'm going to send out 52 emails this year. And I did it. Like, committing to it made me do it. So don't let not having everything ready hold you back, I guess. All that to say, you can fix it and you can build a profitable business A-okay.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's podcast episode. For more information, check out shedidherway.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love for you to leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you think. Until next time, keep doing it your way.